From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. On the first Monday in October, the U.S. Supreme Court begins a new term, and so it did yesterday. Today, the justices are hearing a set of cases about federal sex discrimination employment laws and whether they apply to LGBTQ employees. There are cases this term that deal with guns, with abortion, DACA, and more. But perhaps the most important framing of this year has to do with two factors, the conservative majority of the court and the current atmosphere of the impeachment inquiry. We recorded a preview of this term with McGeorge Law Professor Leslie Gilo Jacobs, and I asked how Congress's desire to get information if the impeachment process proceeds might play out.
The way that would play out is that Congress would be seeking information and they would ask the president for information. And then should the president refuse and assert some sort of privilege, then what Congress could do is go to court and say, no, you're required to give it to me. And so then it would be up to a district court initially, but it could work its way quite quickly up to the Supreme Court to decide whether the president must give up that information when he says, no, I don't have to.
It's often said that the Supreme Court doesn't like to be political or get caught in the politics of a decision. But how would this question be looked at by the court?
Well, it would have to get involved if the president refuses to give information to Congress and Congress says it wants it. We can say the court as a body doesn't want to be political, but its very nature to decide these questions that have all sorts of politics around them. So it can't avoid being political with this type of question.
Not to mention history, the Watergate history, and where this country has been before in this situation.
Well, exactly right. And believe it or not, it was in the mid-70s when the court first decided that the president has any power at all to withhold information. And so the president does have power, but the way the court would decide it is to balance why Congress wants it against the president's asserted need to keep it secret, and it would decide.
That happens to be a subject you're teaching right now at this point in time, correct?
Exactly right. This morning we talked about the Watergate tapes case.
The other situation that's unique for this court is that there are two new justices. They are Trump appointees, and they will change the color, the nature, the personality of the court on key issues that are coming up again.
Yes, that's certainly true. And there's a common thought, and you look at the last term, that the court stayed out of some hot issues. They didn't grant review of them. But this year, they have granted review of them. And so, yes, now we have a solid group of five male justices who have a conservative point of view about how to interpret both statutes and the Constitution. And so we will see how that plays out in the context of these various different subject areas.
Justice Neil Gorsuch is one, and Justice Brett Kavanaugh is a second. There continue to be headlines and rumblings of challenges to the appointing of Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Where might that go, if anywhere?
Oh, at this point, again, we'd be talking about impeachment. That's what the rumblings are about. And to be clear, for impeachment, you need a majority vote of the House of Representatives that, in fact, there should be a trial in the Senate of the person. And so we'd have to see a lot of changes, I think, to see any sort of movement that would lead to that number of votes in the House.
Let's get to some of the key cases that you'll be watching during this session. What's on top of the list for you?
Well, certainly the one that's big that's being argued today has to do with interpreting the federal employment statute and whether it includes protection for gay people and transgender people. What's interesting about that case is that we're going to be looking at these new justices along with the other ones as well and seeing whether they do what they say they're going to do about interpreting of the words of a statute. So the question here is, what does because of sex mean? No employment discrimination because of sex. You might think, oh, that's obvious. But is it really? First of all, you look at the words. The argument of the gay people who were dismissed was, well, gosh, if I, in fact, were, it was a man, a woman, you know, and were attracted to a man, you wouldn't be acting against me. So it's because of sex. But the argument on the other side is, oh, no, because of sex means you have to treat men differently than you would treat women. And so the argument is, well, no, you treat gay men the same way you treat gay women, so there's no because of sex discrimination. So that's just one example of the types of questions that the court will be looking at in this case. Here's where I think things can be interesting when we look at how this court operates. The conservative justices, and in particular the new appointees, say that they're doing a certain thing when they look at the Constitution or at a statute. And in particular, they say they're looking at the words and the ordinary meaning of the words. And so look at this case, look at other cases, and see whether they're consistent in doing that.
Let me jump to the abortion case and to what degree that could have a bigger bearing on abortion rights in this country.
Well, it's interesting that the justices took the case. It takes four justices to decide to review a case and five justices to have a majority decision. What's interesting about this case is that it is a replica of the Texas rule that Justice Kennedy said was a violation of the abortion right and was invalid. Now, again, Justice Kennedy said it and joined with the four more liberal justices to do that. So the significance of this is that the court's going to reconsider a decision where Justice Kennedy was key within just a couple years of that decision being made. It suggests the court is going to be quite open to reversing precedent. I will say reversing this precedent doesn't mean that Roe versus Wade is overruled.
Right. This is a Louisiana law that has to do with a physician's admitting privileges at a nearby hospital.
Exactly. And so it's the same thing that was going on in the Texas case. The court had for so long not said anything about abortion rights, and so states were allowed to pass lots and lots and lots of restrictive rules. So it was a big deal when the court, in fact, said, oh, yes, something that a state does can be too burdensome under the Constitution. But that's the question that's up here is, well, do we really think that anymore? Or in fact, can states do whatever they want in restricting abortion?
I'm going to put another topic under that umbrella of something that the court hadn't dealt with in a long, long time, but is this time around, and that is the subject of guns. So will you talk about the specific case and what the court is addressing in this case?
The specific case has to do with a rule that it was New York City's ban on transporting an unloaded but licensed handgun from a home outside the home to another place. Okay, so that's technical. But what's significant about this is that a number of years ago, the court said that, in fact, there is a right, an individual right, to possess a handgun, at least in a home, for self-defense. And that was an interpretation that the court hadn't reached before. And then it also said in another case, oh, yes, and that applies to states and cities, too. So there's some sort of limit. But after the court decided those cases, it didn't decide to review any other restrictions on gun rights. And it kept saying, no, 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 we're not going to review it. And Justice Thomas, for example, wrote what's called a dissent from the decision not to review, saying, oh, this Second Amendment right is a disfavored right, and we need to take these cases and review them more. But there were not four votes to do that. Now, there are four votes to take it, and we'll see what the five votes do. But the significance is that the court could decide to expand the individual right to possess a gun. It's so undefined right now, it's open for expansion.
Guns are under national debate. There's a loud vocal outcry from young people and older people to somehow address gun legislation in this country. And I guess the court is supposed to be deaf, is that appropriate to say, to what public opinion, popular opinion might be? But is there a bigger context to look at?
Well, I think all of the justices on the court would say that they are not supposed to be swayed by popular opinion in interpreting the meaning of the Constitution. Okay, they're supposed to look at the words of the Constitution. If they decide to, they're supposed to look at the history. That's what's supposed to guide them. But at the same time, we have to be clear that the words aren't clear in the Constitution. The gun right is tied into a right to have an orderly militia, and then the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. And so that initially is not clear to begin with. And then what guns are you allowed to possess? They didn't have handguns when this was put in the Constitution. So certainly the justices will need to bring additional information to bear when they decide, can you transport a handgun? Or what types of guns are included? Are they the semi-automatics? What about those bump stocks? They weren't thinking about bump stocks 200 years ago. So yes, interpretation's going to happen, but direct public opinion, none of the justices, I think, would say that they are thinking about that.
We are getting a preview of some of the cases that the U.S. Supreme Court will be tackling from McGeorge Law Professor Leslie Jacobs. Will some of these cases have some pressure because of the timeline? For example, we were talking about the right to information and certain cases that a decision, instead of being held to the end of session next June, might have a compelling reason to be decided sooner.
That could happen. And as a matter of fact, in Nixon's tapes case, that is what happened. The Supreme Court took review without having the case go to the Court of Appeals, and it actually stayed late in the summer, past its term, to decide the case. So if there were that type of pressure, then the Supreme Court could decide to do that. And as a matter of fact, this president has asked more frequently than other presidents to skip that Court of Appeals step. Mm. Not sure he'd want to do this here, but it's been asked a lot, and it's up to the Supreme Court whether to do it.
Let's talk about the DACA case. And I guess technically I should say canceling DACA as the case that's before the court.
Yeah, well, this is kind of an interesting one. As we know, President Obama is the one who implemented, through his presidential power, he said, the DACA program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that in fact was a decision that we're not going to take action against this group of young adults. This president has said, well, we're canceling DACA because the previous president didn't have the authority to do it, but also, court, you don't have the ability to review whether we cancel it. There's a lot of technicalities involved in this. The bigger issue that's floating around here has to do with the scope of presidential power, but also the scope of agency power. That is, in this one with DACA, and I should say in the employment rights case as well, Congress can change things if it wants to, because we're dealing with the power that Congress has. So if Congress wants to do something about DACA, it can do it tomorrow, but it hasn't, right? And so the question here is how the president did this, not whether it can get done. And the argument here, as has been made in other cases, is that he did it without reasons. And Congress has a statute that says, well, okay, you can do a lot of stuff, but if you do it, you have to at least give some reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is about.
Would you explain the free exercise of religion case? This originates in Montana.
Yes, exactly right. The question in this case has to do with whether Montana can enforce its constitutional provision that says that it can't fund religion, that the state is not supposed to fund religion. And so what Montana did is its legislature came up with a program to fund schools. But then it said, well, if you're funding the schools, you're giving these scholarships, it can't go to religious schools. The question is whether the free exercise clause of the federal constitution actually requires that if Montana funds private non-religious schools, it has to fund religious schools as well. And so I will note that this case is another step in the expansion of religious liberty rights that's been happening over the past number of decades, but is particularly going to be happening and has been happening with this court. It used to be you couldn't fund religious schools. That was way back in the 70s and 80s. Then the rule was, well, as a state, you can fund them if you want to, or you can't fund them. You can choose. What this takes us to is, no, you have to. If you fund private non-religious schools, the Constitution, the federal Constitution, requires you to fund the religious schools.
Should we mention some of the criminal law cases? Are there some that you're watching in particular?
Well, there were two criminal law cases argued the very first day of the term. That was yesterday. They have to do with what the federal Constitution requires when states choose what to do criminally. And so one of them that's interesting has to do with whether states absolutely must have an insanity defense. that's not decided. And then the other one is whether states must have a unanimous verdict requirement or whether they can choose. So each of those is interesting.
How much might the legacy and the impact of Justice Anthony Kennedy be shifted, changed, or even undone by this change, by the swing in the Supreme Court now?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, in a number of key areas with abortion and also gay rights in particular, but other ones as well, prison, he was the fifth vote. Yes, it could be undone because we're looking at a majority that has shifted. And the question is, will they do it and how fast will they do it? And how will they do it, too? You can change rules by overruling a case completely, or you can change it by modifying how the court looks at things or what the rule is. And so those will be the questions we'll be looking at in those key areas.
Thank you. This term of the Supreme Court has already begun, and it will continue until the end of June. And we look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you so much. I was happy to be here.
And that was law professor Leslie Jacobs from University of the Pacific's McGeorge School of Law. She is also the director of the Capital Center for Law and Policy. Up next, is it a wrap for Serious Talk Seriously? You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.